Good morning. Welcome to our third episode of Coffee with Jim and Kim. Kim and I are both personal injury lawyers practicing in Virginia, both licensed in Virginia, but Kimberly is actually also licensed in New York. So if anyone ever has a question about New York law, give her a call. So today's topic is going to be unusual cases.
Yes.
And let's start off with Salon cases. Now, everybody, you know, you drive by a salon and you know, I don't think it's anything incorrect to say that it's mostly women in there. Mm-hmm. But I remember my father, when he got older, went to the nail salon to have pedicures done because it was too difficult for him in his 80s to bend over and, you know,
take clip care his of toenails. Feet.
And so he really got addicted to that because he loved getting a massage and all that sort of stuff. And sometimes he would take some of my children with him, his grandchildren. So this is something that crosses gender lines. But Kimberly, I'm going to defer to you. Give us a rundown on salon cases, the ones you've had.
So they kind of run the gamut. You know, the first thing, like you said, you'll think of is there's some sort of injury with getting a pedicure, manicures, nails. But it will run anything now. Any salon such as facials, chemical peels, I would even go as far as to say Botox, fillers, eyelash extensions, hair, all of this is, there could be problems. Hopefully they're not as prevalent, say, as a car accident case, thankfully. But one thing I would advise anyone, if you are getting any type of service in any salon, please keep a record that you were there. One of the major issues we'll see when these cases come in is someone says, oh, I paid in cash or I paid in Venmo, and you can't really, you know, Venmo might just be like a heart or something and you can't really show where it was going to. Make sure that even if you have to pay in cash, that you get some sort of written receipt that you were there.
Sure.
That one proves that you were there, you got a service that day. But there are problems. There's a lot of things that can come up. The industry has come a long way with sterilization of the tools and the instruments used. But when you are dealing with your cuticles, you're dealing with your feet, especially bottoms of your feet, things can happen. You know, a lot of nail salons now are using almost look like shower caps over their sinks for their pedicures, but things do happen. Cuts happen, abrasions happen, and then what happens? There's bacteria that gets into your nails. Are they easy cases? No, they're not easy cases, especially pedicures, because if you're getting a pedicure in the summer and you get cut and there's a little bit of blood or what have you, but then you walk outside and your foot's exposed, and let's be honest, it's dirty. Like I every night in the summer, I bathe my feet before I go to bed because you're walking and you're kicking up dirt and you're kicking up dust and you're kicking up rock. So there, it's hard sometimes. Did it happen there? Yes, you originally got a cut. Now, or did you cut yourself at home? There's a lot of facts that go into that. But if there's an infection that comes up pretty contemporaneously with your service, it behooves you to get to an urgent care. Get it checked out. I mean, I had one time where they had a lance in my finger. So things can happen very quickly. We've had some where there's been some major issues with fingers.
Sure.
And a lot of times you might not put two and two together. So try to keep a record of when you had the service done, when symptoms started. Make sure to think about that when you first go. A lot of times you forget, oh, I don't know what happened. But if you've had a service, you know, let them know. Hair salon cases, women who have gone in to get highlights or color and the bleach is left on their hair for too long and hair is falling out in clumps. That's problematic because you're not using it correctly, the product correctly, and it's causing a damage. Clearly, if you're losing your hair, it's causing a damage. Burns for eyelash extensions with the glue that you use for eyelash extensions. I've never gotten eyelash. I wear fake eyelashes, but I do it myself. But the glue that they can use on the lashes can actually get into your eye, or make sure that it hasn't been used on someone else where they're taking the applicator and going, I mean, that is so much cross-contamination eye. You want to make sure that the glue is being put onto a proper instrument that has not been used, or they're not using for example, I can give you an example. If you take Neosporin and you know you're putting it on your finger, you don't want that plastic part, if there's a glue like that, on your eye and then on somebody else's eye. So, you know, just be careful, ask questions, you know, and that's your right to know. I would also tell anybody who goes into any sort of salon to make sure that there should be certificates hanging on the wall.
Sure.
There should be the certificates, licenses that shows that everything's up to date, that the salon also has been inspected by health inspectors. That's a big thing you might want to check out. Botox and fillers is another one.
I'm surprised you can do Botox in a hair salon.
No, even any of these med spas that do types of fillers, you want to make sure, ask about expiration dates. There's expiration dates on all of products, like, you know, especially something that's being injected into your face. So just make sure you know that. And there could be a lot of allergies or that you might, maybe you know about, or maybe you don't know about. If you have a certain allergy to something, make sure that you're telling whomever is doing this service an allergy that you have. Latex allergy is a big one. And a lot of people are wearing gloves. So if you have a latex allergy, make sure that you are stating this. These are all things that will come into the fact-specific part of the case, because cases like this are very fact-specific.
Sure.
But they're not recoverable. You know, using a double negative, but it's not a case where there's no way to prove it. We have been successful with these cases.
Of course, we need to emphasize that you need to have a personal injury.
Correct.
Just because you go to salon
and you don't like your hair color,
that's not going to work.
You know, you need some sort of medical bill. And chemical burns are a big deal with facials. We've had some of those where the product is just like painful. Left on too long. And that's the same thing with the hair. If the bleach is left on too long, it will burn your hair. Your hair can fall out. And that is a problem. And we go in and we're not professionals. I'm certainly by no means a professional at all. But and then I tend to stick with the same people over and over again. So I'm not jumping, but check those out. Make sure you have proof that you were there, because that anybody can walk in and say, well, I went here. But if you have no proof of it, it's very, very difficult. So even paying in cash, they should be able to give you a written receipt.
Or if you use Venmo, document that it's for nails at such and such facility.
Right. A lot of times people go in with a gift certificate. Oh, I just used a gift certificate. Well, have something to show you're there.
Right. That's the first thing the adjuster is going to challenge. What's your proof?
Yeah. And don't say, well, I had an appointment and they wrote it in the book, because the book is, or it's written in pencil, or something's crossed out, or you definitely want to make sure you have some sort of record that you were at the facility.
Gotcha.
But the onus is on a person, if you do though have an allergy that you're aware of, to please make the person professional know, because then they'll punt it back to you. Oh, well, you didn't tell us you had a latex allergy and I'm wearing gloves. So it's kind of an open and obvious thing. So that's where the facts come in. But if you are harmed, it definitely is something. Give a call and see if it's worth a phone call.
It's always a free initial consultation. As you were talking, I was thinking about a salon case I handled probably 20, 30 years ago. And it involved a woman who'd gotten her hair cut. And she got up out of the chair following the haircut and fell on loose hair on the floor. And she had really bad injuries. She ended up having surgery because of a herniated disc. The problem with the case is that everyone who knows, who's gone to a salon, is that you just know that after your hair has been cut, it's fallen on the floor.
And it may not have lasted for a sufficient time to have been swept up by.
Exactly. And if you get up too quickly out of the chair, and just people just know, there are certain things you know, that your hair is going to be on the floor. So she basically fell on her own hair. So that was one that was unsuccessful.
Right. That's why what you said, it's worth a phone call, because these types of cases are very, very, very fact specific and small little facts that add up. But I hope I can shed some semi-professional of getting my nails done since I'm 16 and my hair done. And
as an end user, I see more and more men going into hair salons because, I mean, hey, it's, you know, why should you girls have all the fun with pedicures and stuff like that?
So. And I'll even mention one last thing before we move on from salon is, as I'm sitting here thinking about it, is hair extensions are very popular.
Right.
And there's different methods in which it can go into your hair. But there have been people who have had, you know, matting, or and then they've had hair loss from the matting. Again, worth a phone call. but it also can go back to how you've cared for your hair in that specific instance. Or if you did get Botox and fillers and then something went wrong, but you were told not to work out for 48 hours and you did. So all of those things we'll need to know and keep a record of, because sometimes things might not be the salon's fault all the time.
So. Sure. Now imagine the important thing is to get the medical treatment right away, just as any personal mm-hmm. injury case, not to wait too long because of that causation element, right. which is what you're referring to. So, all right, well, I can't think of any other issues to discuss on salon cases. Let's talk about food poisoning cases. Mm. Food poisoning, we've had some success in that area, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But kind of give us an idea of the legal issues that you faced.
So I'll do food poisoning and also say cross-contamination cases, again, where we go back into right. allergies. But a food poisoning case that we had last or two summers ago was a woman who had ordered from DoorDash, ordered a sandwich from a fast food restaurant, and it was a chicken sandwich. And on top of the chicken sandwich was a beefsteak tomato and then lettuce. So when she bit in to the first bite, she's not thinking much because the consistency of the tomato is pretty
right.
watery and
kind of like raw chicken.
And she took a second bite and ingested it and then looked down and realized that the chicken had not been cooked fully through.
Disgusting.
Right. So now you have the worries of salmonella. And so she didn't notice it right away because the consistency of the tomato was overpowering the chicken.
Right.
What she did immediately was she took pictures immediately. Good. And now every phone has a timestamp. So she took the pictures. She got herself immediately over to the hospital because with raw chicken with salmonella, and they did a CT scan. She, of course, she was nauseous and not feeling good, but it was a successful case because she had all the evidence and she clearly had to have these tests run. You have to be tested and make sure that you don't have salmonella in you. She did a CT to make sure everything was okay.
Right.
So she didn't have much treatment beyond that. Maybe she followed up with her PCP, but the point was, is that we were very successful in getting her a settlement in that case because that she had documented everything.
Good. I don't remember. Was that one confidential?
I think so.
The terms of the, not discussing
yes,
the case,
yeah,
but
yeah,
the amount of
terms,
money.
Yes.
Yeah, so I was going to say that a lot of these big chains, big restaurants want to protect their reputation. So they'll put confidentiality agreements.
Right. And I mean, things happen and that's it. I mean, there's also though, we had a case where there was black mold on top of food. Now that's a harder one. Ooh. Because when you open it up and you see black mold,
why would you eat it?
So there's again, fact specific. Also then goes into the issue of cross-contamination. A lot of people have allergies. Right. And seafood allergies and peanut allergies are the first ones that come to mind.
They're, absolutely.
I noticed when I was over in Europe, and it's starting to become big here again in the United States, is waitstaff will now ask, are there any allergies at this table?
Right.
Literally asking about the table, not just the person. And cross-contamination is a big deal. I hate fish. I'm not allergic to fish. I hate fish, which is weird because I'm from Long Island, but I can't stand fish. I can smell and taste if French fries are dipped in the same oil as shrimp.
Can you really?
Yes, I can taste it. I can taste the fishiness in it. So I can only imagine, like my sister-in-law has a seafood allergy. If she got the fries sometimes that was on my plate. I mean, thankfully hers isn't like a life-threatening injury, but she gets her lips blow up, her skin breaks out.
Bad,
yeah. And so seafood and nuts are not her thing. But that's something you want to make sure you tell waitstaff.
Right.
And if you have made them aware, then your food is cooked in the same oil as fish or peanut. Like everyone knows
peanut,
if you have a
allergy,
peanut allergy, you're not walking into Five Guys, right? Because they have bags of peanuts. But there's a lot of things that I wouldn't even think had peanuts in it and or the oils. And I understand sometimes it's a peanut allergy. Sometimes it's a shellfish allergy. So make sure that they know what it is, because when you get that meal and you start to eat, you might not taste fishiness, but if there was something that was cooked in close proximity, same griddle, that can be problematic.
Sure.
And if the restaurant had noted it and the kitchen messed up, well, somebody's going to be held responsible.
Exactly. I remember a case we handled once involving a local bakery that had distributed rolls, I guess it was some sort of bread product. And this a client of ours had some of it, immediately got sick and went to the hospital. And we're able to make a recovery on that case because the bakery had issued a recall notice for the rolls.
Huh.
And it said the rolls were cross-contaminated, as you said. And I remember talking to the adjuster for the bakery, and you know, the adjuster was told to fight like heck and don't pay anything out. And so we had to file a lawsuit because we felt really strongly about the case.
Right.
And then the defense attorney calls me up and was like, I don't know what they're thinking here. What can I do with this?
You've
got the product that was recalled. You've got the batch number. And this lady goes to the hospital, gets treated. And the doctor says, treating because of this bakery's contamination. So that goes back to your earlier point about documentation.
Yeah, definitely.
A lot of time it's all about documentation. This client was able to produce the receipt, the bag. She'd even found the recall notice for us. And that's kind of a unique case. Hopefully there's not too many people eating food that's been recalled.
Right.
But it happened so quickly, she had no idea.
Right.
It wasn't like your example of, opening up the sandwich and there's black mold on it.
Right.
Why would you eat something like that? But
yes. Yeah, it is. And it's also, I've heard adjusters say, well, why, if they have such a horrible allergy, why are they going out? That's not a defense. If people, just because you have an allergy doesn't mean that you're stuck in your home and you're never going, to eat out at a restaurant again. But if you've made someone aware and you've been told, okay, you have an expectation that you're not going to have your food cooked in the same oil as a peanut or a fish. Right. And I'm just saying peanut and fish. I understand that there's other allergies out there as well. But yeah, definitely. Just like I said, with the latex allergy, if you're in a salon, if you've made the powers that be aware, then I do think it's pretty strong.
Let's kind of brainstorm in a minute and give people advice as to if you think you may have been hurt as a result of the negligence of a restaurant, a bakery, or whatever. What are the sort of things that they should do to preserve their claim after they call or before they call a lawyer?
Well, definitely, I would ask for the receipt. I'd ask for...
To your earlier point about the salon, proof that it was purchased.
Proof that it was purchased. And also, I would even go as far as to say, a lot of times now, restaurants, they're typing in things. And we have two people that work here that used to be in the restaurant business. And a lot of that stuff goes into a system, a data system. So it should go in there. The allergies could be noted in that system.
Right.
Ask for the... whoever in the wait staff took the order, ask for the kitchen printout, ask for all that data, or at least ask that it be preserved. The quicker you get to an attorney, though, we do send out letters immediately. Like, do not delete this.
Yep.
Fill out an incident report. Let them know. If you have to rush out and get medical treatment, that's one thing.
Of course, do that first.
But make sure that you call them as soon as feasible and let them know, hey, this is what happened.
Sure. A lot of these DVRs that record surveillance videos, they delete them after 30 days.
Yes.
So we had that problem with motor vehicle crash cases, trying to get the 911 tapes.
Right.
They're gone a lot of times before we were retained by the client.
Right.
So that's good
so
advice.
You can even ask them to keep all footage and that you're going to be seeking representation and therefore, put it in writing and then
sure.
they can't get rid of it. So.
And that's the spoliation letter that we send out.
Yes. And we do that because typically stores, a lot of even the big box stores, they will keep their surveillance footage for 30 days.
Right.
Some places it loops on a 24-hour basis, especially like outdoor cameras and stuff like that. So, if you know that and you know that there's been in the digital age of cameras everywhere, ask that the video surveillance be preserved.
Do you think it's important for the client to keep the food that caused them injury?
If they're aware of it? Definitely take a picture if you can. I mean, cross-contamination cases, it doesn't matter, but in a case where you bit into something we've had
like
things where in
case.
Food, like foreign objects in food, and people have kept the foreign object,
right.
Like screws or nail or something that's in your food. You definitely keep it then. Put it in a plastic bag and be done with it, but don't throw it out. Just keep it somewhere, label it. But that, because I don't recall, but I had one case one time where there was something in pepper, and they kept the foreign object, and make sure it's not a seed. I mean, sometimes you think it's a foreign object, but it could be part of just a really a bones in fish, for example, or a bone in chicken.
Sure.
That we can't really do anything with. But if it's something.
It's a nice segue to that point.
Yeah, it's got to be something that's out of the ordinary.
Right. Yeah, if it's a bone, if it's something that is part of the food processing process, then that's more difficult to win than, like you said, a screw or a.
Unless you've said
plastic,
it says boneless chicken and then boom, you're choking on a bone. There's a, again, this is where it becomes super fact specific. And that's, each case is different. There's no like one size fits all for sure.
Sure. Well, I think we've covered everything we want to talk about today. So.
Well, before we go, talk about cows.
Oh, cows. Okay.
I want to talk about cows.
You want to talk about animal cases.
I mean, there's not one person on a road trip that doesn't get excited when they see cows, but let's talk about cows.
Yes. Let's talk about the last topic today will be animal cases, but there's so many different animals involved. Let's start off with cows.
Yes.
We'll finish that another
good old
time.
Cows. A lot of cows in Virginia, a lot of cows all over the United States.
I'm sure it's worse in places like Colorado where they raise cattle.
I guess you don't have
a lot of cow cases in Manhattan.
But. No, not a lot of Manhattan. I was on a road trip this summer and we stopped for an entire slew of cattle that got on the scenic byway from Utah to Colorado. But we don't have that. That doesn't happen as much here. But livestock is part of Virginia. There's a lot of rural areas of Virginia. And livestock could get on the road.
Absolutely.
And we have a jury instruction that cows are not supposed to be on the road if they're owned by a farmer. I mean, clearly there could be possibly wild cows, but if you own livestock, then you have a duty to make sure that livestock is contained, that it doesn't get on the road.
I know you were kidding about that, but I know in places like Georgia, they have a problem with feral hogs. So the hogs escape, breed in the wild, and I guess it can be kind of aggressive and dangerous.
Right. I mean, and that's the thing. Well, people call sometimes, and like, well, I hit a deer. And I'm like, well, unless you're a passenger, we can't sue the deer.
Right.
Same with, a cow that's not marked. But a marked cow, a farmer's cow, you have a duty to keep that cow contained off of roads because we've had cases where a lot of rural roads in Virginia are not lit by street lamps. And
A black Angus cow
at 2 o'clock in the morning could be a disaster.
Where there's no street lamps.
Right. And there's a wandering cow. And there is liability there.
Absolutely.
Breaks in fences, even electric fences, and which is what I think happened in the Utah-Colorado situation, is that there was an issue with the electric fence might have gone down and all of a sudden they're like, oh, we're free. But electric fences and any type of wooden fences, you have a duty to look them over, make sure they're in good working order. And if your cow gets out and causes a wreck, there could be liability on the owner.
Yep. Let's brainstorm on that a minute. Suppose someone is involved in a black Angus cow trotting out in the middle of the street at 2 a.m. in an unlit area. Your car strikes it, you never see it, even the light's not going to reflect off matte skin on the black Angus cattle. What should the client do to protect themselves?
Pictures, 911. The good thing about 911 in Virginia now is most of the jurisdictions, the officers are wearing body cam, so you can get that body cam video.
Yep.
And this way, if there's any witnesses or pictures or statements taken, we will get that with a Freedom of Information request. But definitely document as much as you can. If after the wreck, if you're feeling okay enough to take a picture, but if not, see if the officers that you call or EMS are willing to take the picture as well of the area. We'll try to figure out then who owns the land.
Right.
And granted, if you see a break in a fence right there, that makes it very easy, but sometimes they are wandering for quite a bit. So you have to figure out where the cow came from. But most, in my understanding is if you own the livestock, it's marked that the cows are
supposed to be, at
least, supposed to be earmarked. So you can, we can figure out who the owner is. But
I know we had a case probably 10 years ago where our client had struck a cow in the middle of the road, and he saw that there was a break in the fence. So that was more easy from a proof standpoint because we had that client being able to testify about that break in the fence.
Right.
But, we've recently had cases where we don't know that there's a break in the fence. So we do the FOIA request, like you say. I guess I would suggest to people, if you are involved in one of these, you know, and you're able to, if you're not hurt too badly, you know, or have a friend, go out and look for a break in the fence. You know, it'd be nice to have a neighbor say, oh yeah, Farmer Brown's cows get out on the road all the time. That sort of thing would at least give us some help.
Right.
But those, as you say, the cattle cases can be won, but again, they're more difficult proof-wise.
All these cases today are super fact-specific. They're not a hit in the rear. That's easy. It's easy all day long, but these cases take a little bit more digging and a little bit more really looking at the facts and every little, anything we think, oh, it's not significant. It could be. It could be. Yep. So and tell us about it. And, you know,
and if it's a family trip and you got kids in the back of the car, sometimes the kids pick up on stuff that,
right.
You know, the adult doesn't necessarily pick up on. I remember the case we tried recently with one of the lead videos at trial was one taken by a 12-year-old boy at the scene of the wreck.
Right. So everybody's got phones now with cameras. So yep, take pictures, take videos.
Yeah. First thing people do, pull out their phone and start videotaping. So. Well, thank you. I think that wraps up everything we wanted to talk about today. And stay tuned for the next episode of Coffee with Jim and Kim. Thanks for watching.